Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the Classic Series Redrive. Check them up. Let's get started.
Well, welcome into the Classic Series Redrive, episode number 87. Mark Hostetler here in Michigan, joined by Kyle Forsythe, Manan, Idaho, and Logan Reinhold at the Reinhold Tech and Western Wear Studio. Just kind of coming off of a two-week trip there to Loveland and Denver, Colorado, to the Big Thunder Show and the National Western Stock Show. Two pretty good shows, and just got home and had a good time with the Forsythe family and Double S Belgians. And sounds like you kind of had a took the long way home, the way it sounds, Kyle.
Yeah, we got out of there pretty good time in Denver. Got the horses loaded up and hit the road about 5:30 and cruising along. Everything was great until the gates were shut on the interstate, which was kind of weird because the weather was pretty good, and apparently there was some fog and stuff, and a propane truck flipped over onto the interstate, and they shut down like that the main I-80, and then they shut down a bunch of neighboring highways too that ran where you could kind of get around it, just because they were in the blast zone, I guess, if this thing was going to blow up. So we had to go way up around to Casper, Wyoming, and all the way around. It was an extra 200 miles, which made for a long day. I think we were 882 miles, I believe, is what my logbook said, which I had to kind of fudge a little. But
I was going to say, you were a little bit over there.
But yeah, we made it home a little before 9 last night, and everything was good. We had great roads the whole way, so if there's any blessing to it all, 882 miles would have been miserable if you had any bad roads at all. But it was smooth sailing, and just kind of sat and relaxed and got home. So yeah, it was a great trip. We had a lot of fun, and yeah, the kids had a good time, it looked like. Everly and Kanan, they cracked me up. They beat the crap out of each other, and then they made them say sorry. They enjoyed that. I think they enjoyed beating the crap out of each other, because when they had to make up, they had to hug each other. So it's like they look forward to smacking one so they could hug each other.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, no, it was a good time. Kids had fun, and we had fun. It's kind of neat. You know, I was talking with someone today again. You know, those 2 weeks together, it just seems like you just become kind of a close-knit family, not just with your crew, but all the other hitches that are there. You know, there's just a couple days where you just kind of hang out, and, you know, like at Loveland, everybody gets there early and driving horses, and you kind of get to know each other's horses better and get to know everybody else better. And it's always just a fun trip. It was a little chilly, the first week in Loveland, but then it turned out to be really nice in Denver.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of interesting things going on too. It was Messenger's kind of final two shows with Brian, and it looks like he's got an opportunity to move forward with some of the horses and stay showing, and which looks like it's going to be kind of fun. But yeah, that was kind of a celebration for them in Denver. I know Kirk and his brother Mark, that's where they got started, and they've shown there a long time. I think it was 40 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe so too. Yep, and come around the corner, upcoming shows. There's the two shows in February. The first show, I believe, is February 1st through the 3rd, and the Grandview Invitational in Ocala there. And then the following weekend is the Grandview World Nights at the World Equestrian Center in Florida. Of course, Shannon and Karen running those shows. And I guess we'll be heading down there for the first weekend, and it's supposed to be nice weather from what I hear. I can't wait coming home to this ice and rain, and it's kind of been a miserable day all day here today and last night. I'm kind of looking forward to heading down south and catch a little sun there that first weekend.
Absolutely. Drive6.com. You can click on the link there, get on order merchandise button. Lots of good merchandise and apparel on there for sale. Also, don't forget about Spark Plug Coffee. If you haven't had it, it is delicious. I had a couple swigs of it yesterday driving in the truck, keeping myself awake, getting Monster energy drinks, but I was vibrating when I got to bed last night. I was like, I don't know, I'm going to be able to sleep now. But
Yeah, for sure. And another reminder for shows to make sure you get your show registered for the summer show schedule. Just talking with people in Colorado there the last few weeks, you know, people are talking about getting their show schedule put together. Make it easier on yourself. You'll get a little bit more advertising on the Classic Series on, you know, social media front and everything. So if shows could just please get their shows registered on time, would be a lot of help to Brenda and the whole organization as a crew. And just another side note here. I just want to say condolences to the Hammersmith family. People probably words out now that Craig Hammersmith of Hammersmith Belgians passed away. Kind of some unfortunate circumstances there from Defiance, Ohio. He's been doing this a long time. I don't know how many years exactly, but it's got to be pushing 25. Of course, Jason Hansberger has been with him for 19 or 20 years. I believe 20 years. Condolences to the, you know, Jason and the whole Chris and the whole Hammersmith family.
Yeah, absolutely. Craig was always a big supporter. I know they competed at the finals a lot of years, and I believe they were reserve champions at least a couple times. Yeah, definitely a great ambassador for our industry, and he'll be greatly missed, sadly missed.
Yeah, for sure. Of course, he built a lot of those heavy duty horse trailers and always repaired them when you needed something. I guarantee you, when you asked him about something about trailers, he knew what he was talking about, and he built them the right way. And he didn't do them the last few years. But he will be greatly missed. Of course, his daughter Oakley was a big part of the Hammersmith crew, and just be kind of sad not seeing that red Hammersmith wagon going around the ring anymore with them Belgian geldings.
Yeah, hopefully they can carry on showing here for a little bit and in Craig's honor. And like you say, Mark, they're in our thoughts and prayers for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Next thing on this episode, it's quite interesting. We had the privilege of sitting down with three very well-respected men in Loveland. Right after the show, we talked with Randy Reamer, Brian Coleman, and Gary Miller. Just some different aspects of judging a horse show. Of course, Randy was a judge there at Loveland and did a good job. And we asked him a few questions on why he did some things. And Brian and Gary were sitting right there. And, of course, they showed there. And it turned into just an excellent conversation.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in this episode. And that was kind of the neat thing. We had a couple of days there in Loveland, got to sit down and record some episodes. So there's some pretty exciting ones coming up, this being one of them. And yeah, just a lot of insight. I would say all three of those guys have judged a lot. They've judged some big shows. A lot of good information there. I think a lot of real perspective and big picture thinking, which is always very positive to hear.
Yep, you got it. And there will be some noise in the background. We were sitting in the barn there, and of course, Jackson Forks horses were there pounding. They weren't too big of a hurry to feed that day, and they were getting a little hungry. So we had to go throw them some hay once in a while, and they finally fed them, and then we had to go pull feed buckets, and we took care of our awesome grease for you. So there will be a little bit of background noise, but I hope everybody enjoys the episode, and we'll see you guys down the road.
The Smith family has been in the meat snack business since 1975. There are now four generations of Smiths working with Glenwood Snacks. Glenwood Beef Jerky is made with solid pieces of 100% premium beef and smoked with real wood smoke. Their jerky is in high protein, low in calories, and darn good to eat. Also, look out for new lines of meat sticks. Look for the SS Belgians, the equine ambassadors of Glenwood Beef Jerky, at a show near you. Browse our many flavors of 100% beef jerky, signature meat sticks, and snack bundles at glenwoodsnacks.com. Follow on Facebook, Instagram, or by calling 208-624-9851. Orders over $50 ship for free. Glenwood Snacks.
joined today with a round table at the Big Thunder Draft Horse Show. We got the Big Thunder Draft Horse Show here in Loveland, Colorado. Mr. Randy Reamer from Jordan, Minnesota. Mr. Brian Coleman from, is it Cremona or Didsbury? Didsbury, Alberta. I don't know how big is Didsbury. 20 people?
No, it's quite a bit bigger.
And the pride of Shipshewan, Indiana, we got Mr. Gary Miller from the Johnson's Belgians. Just go around the table, maybe introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you got going on.
Yeah, so I'm Gary Miller, drive for Johnson's Belgians. I have my own Belgian breeding operation and usually raise 10, 12 babies a year. Along with my family and Kevin Hershberger helps me in. So we go to probably, I don't know, 10, 12 shows a year. And that's kind of, I'm just a Belgian breeder and show Belgians.
I'm Brian Coleman. We're up in Didsbury, Alberta. We have a perching breeding program of our own. My wife, Pauline, and I, and two kids, Taylor and Luke. And we have, usually around six to eight foals a year. And maybe train and show horses for the Mark Messier Memorial Hitch and Thursday show on this weekend at the Thunder Show.
I'm Randy Reamer from Jordan, Minnesota. My wife Stacy and I and daughter Bailey and son Blake have, I was raised with Belgians and dealt with all the breeds and sold Percherons, with Ames Percherons for 18 years and kind of stepped away from showing. And currently we have 14 head at our house of young stock Percherons and some boarding horses. And I currently drive dump truck for a construction company.
I remember your last show with Ames at the Royal. You told me you were done picking shit. Now you got 14 head of horses. Are you still picking shit or Bailey do that?
That's pretty much Bailey's job. But when she goes to the horse shows, that's left to mom and dad to take care of everything at home.
Good deal. Like Kyle said, Randy was the judge here this weekend.
Mighty fine one, I must say.
Just kind of give the listeners a perspective from a judge's point of view on what you were looking for this weekend out in the middle of the ring and what you judged on.
When I judge, I look for uniformity of the whole bunch, and I like to see all the teams work together. And I still kind of like to see good quality bunch when I walk around them, and motion, obviously, but uniformity is a big part for me, how the group looks overall and how they're all working together, and pretty much what I'm looking for.
Ryan, just piggyback off that a little bit. What do you look for when you, any specifics or that?
Yeah,
just what do you do in general?
Very, very similar with what Randy did there. Very much on that, just how the overall group balances up and works together, and just how those teams pair up and work with one another. I really like a team that'll set their head together, move together, and everything. I really like to watch corners on the reverse and just make sure how, when it comes down to that, when you know things are changing, how well those horses stay together and work with one another.
Yeah, so I don't look for anything different than these other two. I want a unit. Front to back, I want three teams working well together. I like to see something that makes my heart skip. If it comes past me and gets me excited, that's gonna get you a long way when I'm judging you. If you come in to try not to make a mistake and just play it safe, in today's competition, you're probably under me. It's not gonna, I want the tugs right. I want in the corners. I want to stay on the rail. transition from trot to walk, all that stuff is very important. The driving skills to me is very important as well. And like Brian said, when the transitions and the reverse, and I want everything staying in line, cornering well, bending in the corners. I want to see somebody throw it out there and go for the gusto. And that's, you know, something that makes my heart skip. That's what's going to get you a little ways with me.
So just to add on to that, Gary, then, and you would say going for the gusto, you mean you're going for it and you might have a little bobble, you know, here and there. You'd rather maybe see that than just maybe holding back and being a little bit more conservative.
I will. And Brian and I have talked about this many times as well. If your hitch is maybe 5 spots better than what you think the next hitch is, I'm gonna. Brian calls it 3 strikes, you're out. But you know, I'm gonna give you a strike or two, because of the effort and really showing me that you're going for the win. So that's kind of way I look at it. I mean, if you hit the rail or do something drastic, absolutely not. But yeah, that goes a long way for me.
Brian, I've often heard you talk about it. So everybody starts off with a bucket of water. And obviously the more talented your horses are, the fuller your bucket of water is. And then the mistakes, you might have to take a little bit of water out of each bucket.
Yeah, I use that analogy.
Go ahead and explain that analogy to us.
My way of thinking of it is if you have a larger tail and it has more water in it, a mistake isn't going to cost you as much as maybe a smaller bucket of water, because you never did have, if you start out with a 5-gallon pail, someone else starts out with a 3-gallon pail. 3-gallon pail never did have 5 gallons in it. 5-gallon pail might lose a little drip of two of water, be down to 4.5. They're still way ahead of that 3-gallon pail. And that's the analogy that I use, because, you know, obviously we're all in the game together, and we go to sales and we go to farms and buy horses private, and you're not going to assemble a group of talent. And that talent, you know, it obviously has financial value, but in the ring, it also has that skill value. So, I mean, we're trying to put together as much talent as we can, and we're trying to get this talent trained to as high a level as we can. If they make a small mistake, it's not the end of the world. I mean, a big mistake is going to be obviously an issue, but if you start with a fuller tail, you obviously have a way better advantage. And that's, I mean, any sporting event is that way. I mean, that's why, I mean, all the way up to where, you know, we're in playoff season in NFL football now, and a fuller tail is, it's going to give you an advantage. So, I mean, that's, every discipline is doing it. So
you're allowed to have,
well, or maybe not allowed, but you're
not allowed,
but not wanting it. But at the same time, I mean, if you have a super talented group and they break one little second in one corner, I mean, that's not going to be
dead last
in my eyes. I just think that, you know, we're obviously, you know, that's what we're striving for. I mean, you're not going to take group that has that much talent, and if they lose a drop or two of water, they're not going to break.
And that's something we see all the time with maybe the smaller hitches or the county fair type hitches come and show against us. You know, they're, oh, we seen this guy or that guy have a bounce in the corner, bounce across the reverse. They still beat us. We had, you know, we had a good smooth drive. And then it, you know, quite a few of them, like say it's politics and whatever. And I, you know, it's just pretty simple. Exactly what we've been talking about is, if your pail's got 5 gallons and theirs got 3, you're allowed to slop a little of that water out. I think that's with a lot of judges.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with both Gary and Brian too, but, you know, when it gets down to the toughest competition we have some of these days, you know, that little bobble is what separates all them top five that are all got that full pail of water.
For sure.
It don't take much these days compared to the level of competition. Unreal.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple. So, for one, losing a shoe. What do you guys, what's your feelings if somebody loses a shoe? What, how do you handle that as a judge? The other thing I have a question about is wind. I just want to know your guys' opinion on wind and how you account for, I mean, obviously we just had an episode with some veterinarians and I think they did a great job of explaining wind and wind problems and stuff. And I think their analogy was, is wind is an issue if it's affecting the horse's performance. Wind is not as much of an issue if it's just simply a sound and not affecting the horse's performance. But just maybe talk a little bit about that, losing a shoe and kind of how you guys, how that affects, and then also on wind. Go ahead, Randy.
Back, starting with the wind thing, you know, my theory on the wind, you know, like Kyle said, if it's not in hurt their performance, you know, and if I come back to them in the lineup after they line up, if they quit, it's no big deal, you know. There's horses are going to make noise when they're working hard and breathing hard, and if it's not affecting their performance, you know, and they're still not doing it, they're still like really noisy 10 minutes later. Yeah. But, and to the losing a shoe, like if somebody loses a shoe and the horse loses the shoe and he's lame on it, yeah, it's going to affect him. But if he loses the shoe and they don't really change stride, it's going to hurt him a little, but not as much as they throw that shoe in there. Gimpy lame, you know.
Yeah, I'd pretty much go the same way on that as far as the shoe issue. I mean, again, and it's gonna matter to, again, going back to that depth of water that we're in. You know, if you're in a deep competition and everyone has that 5 gallon pail, you lose a shoe, you're losing quite a bit of water out of that pail. So, you know, it's gonna be, for me, it's gonna depend on the overall depth of the class, and again, how much it changes that course.
Does it matter when it happens in the class to you? Like if it happens on the first lap or the last lap, or does that type of thing matter? When it
to me, it's gonna matter more on the overall how it catches up with them. I mean, if they come in the class, they do the first lap and they're sound, and they do the second lap and they're lame. Well, they're still lame. I mean, that's a lameness issue. And I mean, you know, we could go into the air and soundness. And the same with wind. I mean, if you make some noise, it's going to separate that first, second, third. It's not, to me, if it's not affecting their overall performance, it's not going to take the bottom. But I mean, you can tell by watching the horses that wind affects. I mean, they'll lose their animation, they'll lose their headset, and that's the horse. So it's obviously affecting them. The horse that makes a little noise, sometimes different wind surgeries and the healing process from them will make that horse have a little different tone. So you can't really just go on the tone. The tone, sometimes they'll be perfectly sound in the wind, but they'll have a little different tone to them. But if I see no change in their overall animation and head carriage, that's not going to bother me. Unless it's super distracting. But that's basically, it's going to be on how it affects.
Yeah, I'm really, really no different than what they said either. I mean, losing a shoe for me, I don't like any equipment failure in the ring. Once you come through that gate, it happened to me at the finals. I had a lead tug come undone, and it's one of those unfortunate things, but I mean, the judge said I would have been at the top if my tug didn't come off. And you know, I can't hold anything against. Once you come through that gate, you're showing under my eye, and I want your tugs right. I want everything to stay intact.
You're saying black tape the crap out of them things.
You know what?
Do what you got to do.
Undone, and Kevin wanted to start taping everything. I think we'll just check our snaps. I'm not against taping, but I think if your snaps and your equipment is up to par, you shouldn't have any tugs and malfunction. But yeah, absolutely. By all means, whatever you need to do to make sure everything stays intact. Same way with shoes. I've lost shoes, made the redrive, got it nailed on before I went back in, or had some come loose where I had to add a few nails. If I'm judging, it kind of goes back to the pail of water thing, but I like to see equipment and top class everything. I want to see clean harness. I don't care to see your wagon cover in the back of the wagon. Not too often that we can see that, but I want it clean. I want details. It right. I want details.
Penwoods Equine Products is a family-owned and operated business that strives to support the growth, performance, and longevity of your equine family with our premium nutrition supplements. We make all of our products with locally sourced ingredients right here in the USA, so you can always be sure you're getting the highest quality. We've always been horse people. Our products were developed to take care of our own horses, and we continue to back our supplements with real-world horse owner experience. We're proud of the results, and we love sharing our generations of equine knowledge to help meet all of your horse's needs. We want to get to know you and your horses, and we're here to help with any questions you have. So reach out to us. You're part of the Penwoods family. You can visit us at penwoods.com, email us at info@penwoods.com, or follow us on social media.
So, yeah, I mean, if you lose a shoe, to me, if I got to watch it the whole class, it's going to bother me versus the last quarter lap going into lineup.
Well, traditionally when a horse loses a shoe, it's usually the horse has probably lost his performance a little bit before he loses the shoe because he's got forward in his motion or just, you know, overstriding and just gets lazy in his motion or something. And that's when he pulls the shoe.
Usually,
gets tired. Or
majority of the time that happened toward the end of the class because they're getting tired, they're overreaching, they're getting heavy.
Obviously, their performance wasn't as good or they wouldn't have lost the shoe.
But. Right, right. Yeah. And on wind, I mean, it's so prevalent in our breeds if they quiet down soon after you line up or whatever, and it doesn't affect their performance, I'm not a big wind guy.
Do you guys think wind is different? Like, would you think less of putting a hitch down in wind in like a six horse hitch class as opposed to like a cart class or a team class, or does it really matter?
I don't know. For me, the more horses you have together in a bunch, the less you would, or I would not. Knock that hitch down if there's six of them and one's making a bit of noise versus one in a cart that's pretty loud going around. I would tend to overlook the six a lot more than I would a single horse in a cart.
I just want to clarify to everybody, we're in Loveland here. Belgians are standing very quiet in their stalls. And there's Perchards and Clydesdales making the pounding. If you can believe that, that's what's going on right now. Go ahead, Brian.
I lost my train of thought there, but yeah, I was
just so surprised. Yeah, the Belgians are standing so quiet. We fed them an hour before the Perchards and Belgians, or Perchards and Clydesdales.
But yeah, again, and the wind, as far as the numbers, I mean, if you have a horse in a cart, I mean, and it's making some noise, that's 100% of your turnout, whereas if there's one out of six, it's a lot lower percentage.
Were you a math major, Brian?
Yeah, almost.
Very analytical in your judging process.
I would have to say probably the same thing, you know, like Brian said, your odds are 1 versus 6, you know, and it all goes back to 2. Like, you can, a lot of times you can see their performance before you can hear it. You know, if they're really windy, you can see they're struggling. And all depends, you know, back to how fast they recover in the lineup, you know. They can be making quite a bit of noise when they come in, you know, and you come back to them shortly and they've recovered, you know. Better than them still being gasping for air when you come back 5 minutes later, you know.
Yeah, let's talk about judging breeds. You judge differently when you're judging an all Belgian or a Clydesdale or a Percheron show or a Shire show than you do when all of them are together. Like here in Loveland, all three breeds were together.
I would say no, my theory's still the same, you know. I still judge the same, even if they're all the same breed. I'm still looking for all the same things, the uniformity, the overall cleanliness, and how the group blends together. And I would say no, I judge the same, whether it's all breeds together or split breeds.
Yeah, because some people would make the argument it's harder to get a Clydesdale bunch mated or a Belgian bunch mated towards all black Percherons. And sometimes that argument gets made, the Percherons all blend in together, and, you know, because they're all black, whereas the Clydes have different feather, the Belgians might have, you know, different strips and different legs. And that's why I ask if you take any of that into consideration or not.
No, not really. I don't.
Well, and I tend to, in my mind, I tend to be a little more colorblind on the Clydes and the Belgians, in that the color won't matter as much to me. I want a team that is matched for type. So if you have a pair of Belgians and you have a short neck, blonde, and a, you know, a shorter body, different strided, then a longer neck, sorrel horse. I mean, it's, yes, that's going to affect it, but it's not the color issue. To me, it's the type issue. So, I mean, I'm somewhat colorblind as far as the overall mating. To me, I want to have those two horses that are, you know, setting their heads together, striding together, doing everything as a team. That's what I'm looking for, more so than a pair that has to be an identical.
Yeah, for me, I you know, that's one advantage I think the Percherons have, is they are identical. And today, a lot of the top hitches die of their horses. I mean, the Belgians, I think 5 out of our 6 are dyed here, just for that simple reason, is anytime you can get everything that looks the same, for sure I'm more inclined to judge the type more in each team than color, but it still adds overall look to your outfit if everything's kind of the same color. And so, you know, it's, to me, it's overall appearance. And most of the shows, we got to go get some person and they're all dyed jet black, and everything matches a little better. So yeah, it's a lot more work and expense to make that happen. But I, you know, it still adds, you could probably ask anybody, and it still makes it look better when everything looks, matches, and is more the same.
Yeah. All right. I agree. Lost my train of thought. Dude, I just saw these guys feed finally, so they quit pounding. And so you're getting ready in the barn, and you, like Randy was judging this weekend, and say by the second day you've noticed something that maybe he was doing in the middle of the ring. Do you make any last second changes or anything, or that morning maybe do some changes to a certain judge maybe that you've shown under before, or do you take that in consideration at all?
I, you know, it's always in the back of my mind if if I think I can give that guy what he's looking for, take a horse out or, you know, I mean, as far as the horses I have to work with, you know, I'm critical on quality. I want my legs clean. We use a lot of baby powder and wrap a lot of legs and stuff. I want everything clean. But yeah, if I think that a horse didn't perform good yesterday, or if I think the judge might have picked on me for that horse, I'm going to try to give him something different. I don't always know what that is, but if I have another option of putting a different horse in or doing something different, because I've already found out the day before that obviously he didn't particularly care for a horse, then yeah, I try to, you know, I'm not going to change my whole style. I'm not going to check everything 4 notches longer and drop the heads down the spreader bar or do something weird like that. But if I think I can kind of keep my group going and maybe change a horse or switch sides or whatever, then yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in my mind, I have that ultimate picture that I'm trying to paint, and I don't tend to too much play my game to what a judge may or may not think. But I want to, you know, because I can get distracted by that, thinking, well, he didn't like this or he didn't like that. I've done that when I was younger. I find it's better off to just have that picture in my head. And I'm trying to, as much as I can, take that picture and present that to my judge. And, you know, I'm my own worst critic, so I'm tend to not taking that horse out or changing the horse because I think the judge may or may not like it. I take them out because I don't. And they little tend to, in the long run, I think will give you a better game. Because if you get playing up and down to, you know, different judges or what you perceive, and you may think that you're changing for a judge, and you're really not changing for the judge, you know, so I think you kind of get to play a little bit of head games with yourself. So I just find that I have that picture that I want to paint. And if I change your horses because I think they didn't, you know, meet my expectations more so than the judge's expectations. Because a lot of times at the end of the day, I end up getting most of the problems in my placing, not necessarily a judge or even other exhibitors. I just find that I have to have my game right. And when my game's not right, I don't have the results that I may want to have, or, you know, a different, it's a growth process or a rebuild process or whatever you may be going through at the time. But a lot of times if you have the results you want, it's because you played your game and presented that picture that you want to have.
Exactly. Just to comment a little bit on what Gary and Brian said back to when I was doing this full time, you know, like, you know, your horses and you know what they did wrong and you know what the judge seen, because you're seeing it yourself. You know, you should be able to know your horses enough to know which one cost you this and that. And yeah, you're obviously going to try and change it. Or if you don't think you can make that horse perform how he should be, you're going to, if you have the horsepower to switch it out with a different one and try and improve yourself, that's obviously what you're going to do.
So just to piggyback on that, what's your thoughts? So Randy judged 3 days of the show here at the Big Thunder. Some shows it's a different judge, you know, one day to the next, new judge, fresh judge. You might just, hey, let's just see what this guy likes or whatever. Randy judged all 3 days. What's your thoughts? If you didn't have a good first day, you go back, you watch the video, you thought, dang, I mean, they drove it about as good as we can. Would you talk to the judge and ask him, you know, hey, what do you think or what didn't you like today? And then kind of make an adjustment, or do you kind of stay away from the judge? Don't even speak to him. What's your guys' thoughts on that? If it's acceptable to ask a judge during a show what he liked or what he didn't like. And I'll start with Randy here. And did that happen this week at all, or any thoughts on that?
I mean, I guess it really wouldn't bother me, you know, if the guys just ask, you know, what could I do to improve things? What didn't you like? You know, as long as he's not, you know, just chewing your ass like he's so low.
Be respectful.
Be respectful. Want to know what he he didn't like, you know, and what he could do to improve, you know, for the second day. I guess I don't have a problem with that.
I agree. If it's done with respect, I really have no problem with it. And especially where I would have seen it, you know, in the past, the questions I've been asked, and it's typically from newer exhibitors. And a lot of what you can tell them isn't really going to help them out. So, but maybe it's stuff they can take home and work on. Because, I mean, if you have a horse that's not driving as well or they're not carrying their head as well in a class, you're not going to fix that from one day. It'll be a longer process than that. So if it's done with respect, I don't see a problem with it. A lot of times it's done after the show. I've had exhibitors, you know, say, what can I do with my group to make them, you know, work better another time? Because, you know, you're not going to make those kind of changes. I've never asked a judge during the show what they may or may not like. I mean, typically, like I say, I try and surround myself with people that keep me down where I need to be. And
I have a wife that's pretty quick to tell me how good or bad things are, and usually critical enough.
Yeah, and you know, and if you're your own best analyst, you know, that's, again, the things that you can change yourself or things you know you can change. Whereas if I go ask a judge, what can I change? Well, he may say something that I have no ability to change in that period of time. I know if I can change the way a horse is bitted, the way a horse is checked. I mean, I know if he can take a percentage more or less or whatever to do a better job. Whereas if I ask someone else that's outside of that realm of control what they think, well, they may give me an answer for something that we can't do in a short period of time. So you want to make sure that you can make the changes or small adjustments that are doable, that's fair to your horse in that period of time.
Crystal Springs Stables, located in the heart of Amish country in Millersburg, Ohio. Specializing in stallion services, sales, and show fitting, a full line of equine repro equipment and supplies, reproduction seminars, equine reproduction services, including frozen semen collection and storage. Their stallion lineup this season includes Orndorff's Master Encore, Whispering Winds Cactus, Agristor's Diamond's Dream, Rossland Riley, Oakhaven's Illusion, and Dale's Stonecrest Bentley. Crystal Springs Stables, looking forward to partnering with you for success in the coming year. 330-231-2776. That's 330-231-2776. Contact Crystal Springs Stables for all your breeding needs.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same. I don't have, if I'm judging and you know, we all know each other, we're not a very huge family, showing, somebody says, hey, you know, what didn't you like? Well, if you're going around there, you're fanning in the corners, you're not bending in, your wheel tugs are loose, you know, that is something that they can easily fix potentially if they're most in our league. Most drivers can make sure their wheel tugs aren't flopping, or, you know, their tugs are right, or they're bending in the corners. There's drivers that really maybe don't have the ability to bend in the corners very well, but most of them do. And if, you know, if I'm judging and, you know, somebody texts me, hey, what can I do to improve tomorrow? That's something that they have a pretty good ability to fix. And it's happened in the past where I said, hey, I can't live with wheel tugs flopping. Hook your wheel team a notch shorter, or, you know, let them out a little more. That's an easy fix. So I, you know, if it's done with respect and I'm judging, somebody says, you know, what can I do to improve tomorrow? And if it's something I think that they can, I got no problem talking to them at the show, or if they come to the rail and, hey, tomorrow's a new day, you know, I just want to get better. Absolutely.
For me, I'd much rather have them ask, what can I do to improve, rather than what did you not like?
Yeah.
To me, that's a very frustrating question to get asked, because most of these hitches are good.
Right.
It's not what you didn't like. It's what can they improve on a little bit. Maybe checking a couple horses a little different. Like Gary said, maybe bend them into the corners a little bit better. Maybe hooking the wheel traces a little tighter. Rather than what did you not like? I always found that just to be a frustrating question to get asked
right
after you're done with the show or done with the class. But anyway, the kind of another thing is, so we're in a little bit smaller ring setting here. There's 4 6 horse hitches in the ring, or even a team or something. And
one more comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Randy. Yeah, go ahead.
The main thing is, you know, if you're going to ask a judge what he didn't like or what he can do to improve, be respectful about it. You know, don't be going in there just storming mad, you know, because most of the time you're mad at yourself and you're just looking for somebody to take it out on. That's just not classy.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And most of the time, too, is you're right, Randy. They know what it is.
Right.
And or else they're just too stubborn to realize what it is. And they want to take it out on you. You're right. Be respectful about it.
Well, we had a podcast just the other day with Gary and Scott Nevergall. And Gary made a great point as far as he said he doesn't think there's as many politics and stuff that goes on as what we all think. Or a lot of times it gets, you know, spoke about. I mean, judges majority of the time are just doing what they feels right, and I would say 99%+ of the time the judge is doing what he feels is right and doing what he's seen. And I mean, it's like you say, be respectful about it and ask what you can improve on rather than.
And it'd be so much easier if we had a finish line and the fastest one or the hardest pulling one would win. But really, when you put yourself and you judge these shows, it's what you see, and sometimes you miss things. If I'm judging, I want to judge the whole class. When you're in my ring, I want to judge you, and I'm looking around. Some guys, you know, I have no problem with the guys that want to do just one rail. But if I'm judging, I'm looking around. If you're needing to tune a horse or something in the back, I'm probably going to catch it. Not always. Absolutely not. I don't have eyes in the back of my head, but when you're in there and I'm judging and you're under my eye, I judge the whole class. So, yeah, I mean, everybody's a little different. Some guys say, do what you got to do behind my back. But when you come in front of me, you better have your ducks in a row. So that's just another difference that I have.
And to add on to Kyle, what Gary never, I do think 90, all the judges, they're just doing the best they can at the end of the day. And anyway, so back to what I was going on a little bit ago. So you're judging this class. There's four in the ring, whether it be a team or a card or a six. There's one really that's really holding up the class a little bit, and was the first one in the ring. Normally you reverse on the first one in the ring. Are you going to tell the ring man to reverse on the second one? Is that disrespectful to the first guy that's maybe holding up the class a little bit? Do you still reverse on that first guy, even though he's holding up the class? You just leave it to the ring man as a judge. What's your perspective on that? And how do you handle that situation? Give everybody an equal opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, typically, I mean, it'll, for the most part, I like to see the first one in the ring, first one to reverse, first one. You want to give everyone, and that's going to amplify as you get into a bigger ring. But there are the cases of someone that's really holding up a class, and if they're having any kind of difficulties, I mean, you do have the right to, you know, either ask them to, you know, not, I mean, if they're causing enough grief, they're holding up the whole class, you can excuse them from class. And I think we maybe need to do some of that. I mean, if they're having, and sometimes I think we feel sorry for a person in a position you want to see, but if they have if they're having enough difficulty, I mean, if they're just slow, you can buy enough space to show your horse. If it's a matter of, you know, if it's just a matter of a little difference in speed,
you can make that work. But if it's if they're having enough difficulty, it should be an excusable situation. I think we should use that some, and maybe we get a little too nice sometimes, maybe, as far as horses that are having lots of grief, right?
As far as the reversing part, I mean, a lot of times, though, if you reverse on them first, you know, and they're breaking stop, you got time to give yourself space and get yourself spaced out, especially in a big ring, you know. If you let them go on by and reverse with the next guy, it's just going to be a matter of time before they're all bunched right back up again anyway, you know. Especially when you got a big enough ring, like Brian said, there's enough room to give yourself space in the back corners and stuff to give yourself room to show your hitch.
It don't happen very often where one is just super slow, but we do have the shows where they just, I mean, they really mess somebody's chances up to really perform at their peak. And I, you know, if I'm judging and I think it's a benefit to the other exhibitors, I will, and when I'm judging, some judges just tell the ring man, first guy in, first one to reverse, two laps each way, line up, whatever. I like to take that in my hands when I'm judging to call the reverse. And if the first guy in is not holding anything up and everything's going, I'd sure hate to make them go in a lap extra. I know it's aggravating for me. When you go in there and your peak performance and you're the first one in and you go an extra lap on everybody else, I don't particularly care for that. You know, if the last guy in is the first one to reverse, that's, to me, it's not giving everybody equal playing field. So I typically, as long as the first one is not just barely into trot, I like to reverse with the first one.
What's your guys' thoughts on as far as how many laps to do? I was pretty thankful Randy judging this weekend did one less lap in the eight, which was I thought beneficial to everybody. When you're driving an eight, you have to do five or six laps, and never by the sixth lap everybody's kind of having trouble usually. But what's your thoughts on length of driving? What's the ideal when you're judging as far as length of driving? And is it one of those things that if it's really close, do you drive a little bit longer to try to make your decision? Or is it, you know what, I'm going to make my decision based on two laps, reverse, a lap and a half, line up, or whatever you choose? What's your ideal in a judging situation? And obviously size of ring plays some degree into that, but we'll lead off with Randy. Go ahead.
Like, you know, like Kyle said, I'll go the same amount of laps, you know, and if it comes down to a redrive, you know, and I've got my mind made up after that first lap or in a reverse, and I'll line them up. But if it's still pretty close, I might go an extra lap on a redrive. But if I've got my mind made up on the four that I brought in to compare, you know, after I went that lap and reversed them, and I'll line them up if I got a decision made right away and sort themselves out.
I'll, when I go to a show, I typically try and look at the size of the ring for myself, and I'll kind of gauge how many laps I kind of want. So a bigger ring, you're going to obviously, you know, like a big ring like this, two each way is, that's lots enough to make a decision. You're still going to see the performance out of your horses. You're not going to be on that tail end where you're starting to lose too much performance on your horses. But basically, you want to have that where, you know, your horses are coming in and they're showing to their optimum. And if you have these marathon classes that you see sometimes, and I would say less typical nowadays, but maybe you've seen that maybe in the past with some of the older style judges where it would just be a marathon, and you know, first, the last guy standing was what the hitch it would win it.
There was a time, like in Ontario,
I'd never seen it before, but we were showing up there and like the judge would basically place the class. They would put them back on the rail and then start pulling them in, line up in order. And you just keep driving and driving till the class was placed. And it was like, this is ridiculous. What's going on here? But
yeah, exactly. I mean, that was an older, you know, maybe more of a Scottish style of judging or older school style of judging where they would, you know, keep pulling around and they pull in, you know, pull one in and that'd be a winner. But I mean, if you're the last place guy, you'd always have another three. You'd be pulled in. You know, you'd have about 10 laps. Probably if you're having trouble, probably one lap. So I try and keep, so I'll kind of gauge a ring according to its size. I mean, if it's a smaller ring, you're going to go a couple more laps. With a medium sized ring, you're going to go a different amount of laps. And keep it fair. So I try and keep my classes the same way. So I mean, you're not coming in thinking, well, is this going to be a marathon class or is this going to be a shorter class? I mean, I keep my class the same way. And then that's what the redrive is for. And you have your redrive to sort that cream. And again, with cream, you don't want that cream to go around there until it goes sour. So try and keep that and try and make your decisions fair and, you know, as promptly as you can so that you're not, you're still having a show. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we want to impress an audience. And an audience is not going to be impressed by a bunch of sweaty horses running around there and the flowers flipping over because we just run them and run them and run them because we feel we need to make a decision that has the importance to go a length of time. So I mean, you want to make sure that that's done as promptly as you can and as fairly as you can.
But I think part of that is just judging from the positive. Like,
right.
If you're driving so long that horses are all wearing out, then you start judging from a negative perspective rather than a positive perspective.
The Redrive Podcast is supported by the Draft Horse Journal, the world's foremost heavy horse publication, now celebrating 60 years of quarterly releases since 1964. If you work, breed, exhibit, pull, log, trade, or simply admire heavy horses, the journal should be coming to your mailbox. Visit drafthorsejournal.com to subscribe today.
I agree. I go typically judge the size of the ring and, you know, a little ring like the Mech, probably three laps the first way and then a lap and a half or so the second way. Typically, lots of times, most of us have our mind kind of made up. We know kind of what we want to see in a redrive and I never like to waste my top hitches, get them too tired before the redrive. Back in the day, like they said, the old timers were trying to see who had the fittest horses. But anymore nowadays, all us trainers have our horses pretty well optimal fit. And so back in the day, family hitches, some guys had more time or took more time to train the horses. Now I feel like all the top hitches horses are in pretty good condition. So another thing that we could discuss is, you know, some judges will pick their top four and their second redrive is the next four. Some leave a hitch or two standing for first and second. My thoughts on it is I kind of take the, not a big sports guy, but my thoughts is if you make the final four, I've judged before where the fourth one in my final four wrecked. And I got a lot of grief for having them fourth instead of maybe eighth or something. But if you showed me, now if my mind's not made up and the ring only allows for four to redrive at the time, then yeah, I could see dropping somebody out of the top four into maybe sixth or something. But for the most part, if the ring allows and my size and what I want to see, then you know, if you make the top four, that's as low as you can go. I don't know. That's probably running off on a different topic here, but
I just want to make one quick comment about the judging, you know. And when I first started judging, an older gentleman said to me, even if you don't have your mind exactly made up, just don't stand back there scratching your head. Just place them and make it think like you got it. You know, don't stand back there and take it forever trying to figure it out. You know, if you got one, or just do it like you think you know it and don't stand back there forever.
So, Randy, this weekend there was a circumstance, and Brian, you were involved in it, where there was a four and a redrive and then another four and a redrive. Brian had a little bit of trouble. He had a horse that I guess ran out of air or was having some trouble. He chose the line up, which was, I mean, I think is the right thing to do rather than put the horse at risk. He chose the line up early, lap early before the lineup was called, and you put him eighth. There was eight hitches in total redrove. Just explain coming to that decision. And
well, like Gary said a little bit earlier, you know, I kind of had my top four picked out, but all eight of them in the redrive were still in the running, you know. They're both part of that, actually a second class, you know. So if he completely rests in the redrive, I'm not going to throw him to the bottom of the whole class because some other ones weren't in the second go-around.
Brian, just speak to that too, just. I mean, obviously, you were a part of that. How did you feel after that?
Well, I mean, anytime things don't go to your expectation—not an expectation, but your hopes. I mean, you don't ever have an expectation or a hope that you're going to go in there and have something like that happen. But when it does, I mean, you're never—I'm never thinking, "Well, I should have been in there. I didn't get to do what I wanted to do," and so you end up where you end up, but. Everyone has a little different feel on how that there should be a distinct top four and then a distinct next four. Some guys will run two groups and they'll mix and match between the two groups. And I find that maybe a little hard to follow, but at the same time, I mean, I think when you judge, you should judge in a way that you process information. So if I have to follow a standard of the way that you process information, I'm not going to be as true to myself, and I'm not going to make decisions in a way that's going to come out with some clarity. So, I mean, if you have a way of processing information and you think, okay, this whole group made the redrive, and I'm going to spread them, then you can kind of pick and choose out of both groups, and you have the ability to compare between two groups. Well, then that's how you process information. So, I don't think that we should really get caught up in what is right and what is wrong, because there really isn't a judging book that says what's right and wrong. But I mean, being true to yourself and making decisions on how you process information is the way that you're going to come across as true as you can be and as consistent as you can be, so that you can follow, you know, or other people can say, hey, I can follow you. I knew where you were going with that class.
Since we're on the redrive topic here, there's still one place that I know of that pretty much, well, they do require you to bring them in at the Indiana State Fair, and you crank them to the left two or three laps and give them all you got with the other people in the middle. I remember, you know, we all remember back in the day, that's how it always seemed like it used to be. Everybody'd come in the ring, you pull them out, you know, give them two laps, give them all you got, maybe put two or three back on the rail. It seems nowadays, you know, there's either two redrives, like, you know, 16 hitches here, Randy redrove four and four, redrove half the class. Thoughts on that and how that's evolved? Are we maybe a little bit too dependent on redrives now, instead of just placing the class? Should we, you know, it used to be you'd put all your good horses on the left side because there was going to be a redrive. You were going to have your left side looked at. Probably not the case so much anymore. Should we be looking to maybe go back that way a little more to, you know, some say, you know, you go to, you know, two shows in 3 weeks or three shows in 4 weeks, and, you know, you go through your class, you know, have another redrive, every show you're hooking two, you know, two sixes, sometimes three sixes. Are we pounding them too much? Should we go back to the old way a little bit more so? What's your guys' thoughts on that?
Just to comment a little bit on that, Mark. My theory on is, you know, if I don't need a redrive, I'm not just going to have a redrive because people are counting on saving them for that redrive. So, like, I didn't have a redrive in the 8-year at Loveland because I didn't need one. They all sorted themselves out. And back to the bringing them all in and then redriving them, they wanted me to do that here because they weren't sure if they were going to be able to get them sorted out here with the weather and everybody having to stay inside. And I told them that I prefer not to do that. You know, if they could get them sorted out, that would be great. I did not want them all in the ring at once.
Yeah, again, I agree 100%. I mean, I don't think, and again, we go back to our original analogy of the tail. I mean, if you have, you know, if you have distinct sizes of tails, which you see at some of your smaller shows or a show where a tougher group will come in, I don't think you necessarily need to have a redrive if things are very distinct. You know, a smaller group of hitches, maybe if there's, you know, 6 or 8 hitches and it's quite clear who's winning and who's not winning, then no, I think you can just go ahead and replace your lap. And I do agree. We're getting to where, you know, we're asking for so much intensity out of our horses these days that, you know, you start doing back-to-back shows, you know, like in heat in the summer and, you know, elevation out here in the wintertime. I mean, there are a lot of factors that, you know, just over-fatigue our horses. Not so much that they're not in shape for it, because they really are, but you can just ask for so much intensity that you end up with fatigue that comes from the intensity that we have.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I've judged maybe smaller shows where there was 8 sixes and we brought everybody in and I still had a question on 2. I got no problem if they're all in, and I'll maybe have just 2 of them take a lap or 2 and line back up. You know, I could see these, you know, we're in the toughest times that I've ever seen in my life with all the breeds. I mean, you know, Randy had every breed in his redrive, and even the Clydes are tougher probably than they've ever been. So I can see it is nice if we could maybe dial it down just a hair bit. We're asking a lot of these big horses to go in there and just give it their all. And when you do back-to-back shows to try to make the finals, and it's pretty taxing on these athletes. So I would have no problem to maybe dial it down just a hair on maybe length of redrive or maybe just line them up and go in a couple hot laps and line them back up. But I could, you know, like Brian said, every person has their own way of processing what they like and to get it right.
Yep. No, I still think I always find it exciting when they pull you out, everybody in the middle, and you can get to drive around the wagons, because, you know, all the exhibitors are watching as well. I find that to be exciting, but like I said, it doesn't happen very often anymore. One more, maybe just to touch on a little bit here, is this circumstance here this weekend where, you know, 30 below outside, you had, you know, no time to enter the ring. Indiana State Fair, you got to make that 90-degree left-hand turn into the ring. There are shows where you go to where you can have them all in sync coming into the ring. Gary said, you know, earlier, as soon as you hit that gate, you're under his eye. Are you forgiving that first half a lap? Is it just like the Royal? You walk down the ramp or start trotting down the ramp. When does it start? Are you forgiving in certain situations? How do you guys approach that?
Typically on my first lap, you know, I'm looking for lameness and stuff. And like here, the committee came to me, they had a driver's meeting, and then they wanted the first lap to be free. If somebody had to stop and change something, not to hold it against them because, like Mark said, the weather, they couldn't go out and drive them a little bit and know if they had a bit of horse down. And I agree, that was fine with me. But typically, when I'm judging, you know, they're coming into the ring and they have a little bobble when they come through the gate. I'm not holding that against them. I'm pretty much looking for lameness and unsoundness and that first lap.
Yeah, I agree, Randy. I'm fairly forgiving on that first lap as far as, you know, it's a little bit of time. Even at a show where they do have room, when they come in and we're, like I said earlier, we're asking for a lot of intensity out of these horses. Now, if they continue to not settle in, then we do have an issue. But that first little bit, that first half lap, where, you know, they maybe need a second to settle in and get used to, you know, a sharp corner or, you know, a difference in grade where they're coming into the ring. That's to me is not really an issue at all.
If somebody that's pushing you pretty hard comes through there and they got everything flicking, it can, in my mind, I still seen a horse or two bounce for that first quarter lap or whatever. I'm looking for soundness overall appearance when you come through. And you know, a lot of times when a hitch comes through that gate, that's most of the time when the horses are, they're showing you they came to show you something, and so that's usually when my heart skips a beat the most, when I first see that first appearance, because they're coming through that gate, and that first appearance to me is huge for me. I've had judge the show one time and the guy comes in and takes the banners off the side rail and he's kind of upset that I held that against him. And I'm like, well, he was asking how I judged the first lap, and I, you know, my answer is once you're through that gate. Now, this weekend was a little different story. The weather conditions, it just was not. I mean, we had 30 below wind chill factors. It wasn't fair to let hitches go out and warm up because the show committee didn't want to lose all the heat for the fans and also for the exhibitors. So if one person would have went out, this place would have cooled down drastically. So I could definitely see where they could ask a judge to let somebody bit down on the first lap or whatever, but that's kind of my take on the first lap.
Yeah, I just want to comment a little bit on Gary's theory there too. Yeah, like I said, the first lap kind of not really critical, but like if you, Gary said, you come in that first lap and you smack them into the wall and you're tearing stuff off the wall, it's definitely going to hurt.
And if nobody else did.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
If everybody does it, then
that's one. I just want to make one more comment overall about the judging. Like, we go to all these shows, and that's why they have a different judge at every show, you know, because Gary's opinion, what he likes overall, might be a little different than mine. That's why we don't have the same judge at every show.
And just to go back, that I would think you would agree, Randy, this weekend there was very few horses that looked that tour on the first lap. I mean, everyone is still striving for that. They're not looking for a freebie on that first lap. They're looking to impress you right when they come through the gate.
Yeah, they were all definitely driving, coming through the gate, you know, but there were a couple people in the bigger hitches that did have to stop on that first lap and get a horse down, which was no big deal.
I would have had to get a welder and weld another link on my bits if I was going to bit him down any further.
We would like to thank Shipshawana Harness and Supply in Shipshawana, Indiana. Mr. Bob Schrock, if you're looking for products for the show ring or at the farm from A to Z, anything you need, horse nutrition, tack, you name it, make sure you check them out, ShipshawanaHarness.com. Follow them on Facebook or visit their shop in beautiful Shipshawana Amish country, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. and Saturday, 8 a.m. till 12 noon. Call Mr. Bob Schrock, 260-768-7254 for all your draft horse needs.
So the one big thing in the industry, and a lot of horse industries have a rule book, like a judging book. Like, this is how we judge our horse. This is the criteria. We've got a scoring system. We got whatever it is. The draft horses have never had that. It's, you know, we hire a judge and we take that judge's opinion. And if we like it or we don't, we move on to the next show and we take the next judge's opinion. Do you think it will be beneficial someday for us to have a judge's criteria, a judge's rule book, or a judge's rubric, or some sort of judging guideline? And do you think we could get a committee together with enough people agreeing on what that should be, or do we just accept it the way it is and be okay with it?
Yeah, I don't know the perfect answer to that. I know some of the light horse breeds and different breeds have that. And I know of a Belgian breeder that went and took the test, studied their criteria and passed the test. And he was legal to judge any of those shows. And he said, you know what? I've got all the credentials. I really don't know what I'm looking for just because he passed the test to do it. I think that's one of the beauties in our industry, to have different opinions. We don't all need to, you know, agree on one thing. We kind of know if somebody judges a little more what they look for, if they're placing the class after we line up, or if they're looking for a performance class, or the combination of both, which, you know, I am. I like to judge them standing still as well as a performance, but the performance part of what we do plays a lot bigger role in my mind on placings than standing in the middle.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my thought is, like, don't fix what's not broke. And I don't think we've had a judging issue within our industry. I think there is enough common understanding that we have a common goal. Now, there may be different flavors. Some guys might be a little bit more into headset. Some guys might be a little more into motion. So there's going to be some different flavors within that. But if we went to any kind of a rule book, it would take an extensive amount of education and to make a stand, and that we might not get in the end what we really want. I still think we need education within our industry, but I don't think we need necessarily standardization.
Yeah, just to touch a little bit on what Brian said, but the rule books and stuff, all these saddle horses, you know, they're dealing with one horse most of the time in front of that judge or that guideline they're setting. Whereas we're dealing with up to eight, you know, it's totally different, you know. I mean, like Brian said, educational, we could do more of, but they have a hard enough time finding judges right now, let alone to try and make everybody get a judging card to be able to judge a show. And like I think Gary said, the beauty of it is everybody has a little different opinion on what they like to see, you know. So some guys might like Kyle's bunch, you know, and if everybody in the guidelines was Kyle's bunch, Kyle would win all the time, you know, if they had to follow them guidelines. I think it's the beauty of it.
That'd be just fine. No, I'm just kidding.
Everybody has just a little different theory what they like, you know.
No, I think, and Gordy Rizzico always says, if get your own so good that everybody's going to love it. I mean, have absolutely amazing headsets, have amazing motion, amazing soundness, amazing togetherness, and what's not going to be to like.
Yeah.
But exactly. That's almost impossible. And And the other thing, you have to drive what you like, and train your horses to what you like. And if you like what you're doing and you like how your horses perform, be happy with that.
And that's the thing, you know, we see it all the time, and it is probably frustrating and to the newcomers coming in, you know, they're the ones lots of times that would love to have a rule book or a standard to go off of. And because a lot of those come from breeds or disciplines that have that. And I think, you know, it's still up to interpretation. You can have all the schooling you want. You know, we have people in our industry that want bone. They want the big, massive, boned, old-style horse where, you know, now we have show horses. They don't – I grew up farming. We did all our farming with these guys, and, you know, they'll make the argument that these horses can farm. These horses still can farm, and they you know, they're just a different – type of horse. But as far as the rule books, it's I hear it mostly from newcomers that would like to have a little more guidelines, and I think that's where education comes in. We need to do our part educating people that want to come in and do this.
Yeah, I agree. I was just going to say that, Gary, that goes right to Brian's point about the educational part of it, instead of, you know, having got, and at the end of the day, you can have a rule book that's, you know, 500 pages thick. And if it's a judge, he can simply say, I didn't see it, you know, or I didn't notice it. So then at that point in time, what good does that rule book do? It really doesn't do a whole lot of good. You know, now if there's a scoring system or, you know, different, or a finish line and testing and all that stuff, that's a different story. But if somebody's opinion, they can still say whatever they want.
We're dragging this one on. It sounds like, I don't know exactly every detail, but it sounds like they're having two judges judge the class and both place it. And they're going to announce the placings for both judges. That's my understanding. What's your guys' thoughts on panel judges and organizing drive offs? And I mean, and Calgary is one of those shows, and this is just my experience, I think the panel judge works well because there's usually three or four hitches that kind of separate themselves at that show in the champion six. And that's usually all three judges kind of want the same three or four hitches back in for a redrive. And it just seems to work good, but you get to a show like this or Ohio at the Governor's Cup or something, there might be 10 or 12 hitches all gunning for it. That makes it a bit of a challenge to get a redrive back in and organized if this judge wants to see these three and that judge. But anyway, long story short, what's your guys' opinions on that? And have you been a part of panel judging, and what's your experiences with that? Are you in favor of it or not in favor of it? Or
well, I have no problem with panel judging. I you know, I mean, there's going to be different formulas for different places. Again, different ring sizes, different class sizes. I mean, but I mean, I think the biggest thing is you need to come up with a formula that looks for your situation, your show. I mean, I think, you know, Calgary, basically, we suggest, you know, I mean, we have our suggestion to them that you have, if you have your redrive, I mean, your judges work independently, and each judge out of the three judges can pick two for the redrive. So, you know, you pick your favorite two, Marcel pick his favorite two, and Jay would pick his favorite two. Now, if that ends up being, and so you know it's not going to be more than six groups coming back for a redrive, which the size of ring, that's with three guys, and it's three and three and way to go. So, I mean, that's not necessarily a perfect formula, but that's what we do. That's what seems to work fairly well. And typically, you're only going to see, you know, maybe three, maybe four come back for that redrive, because a lot of the judges are on the same page. So they're seeing things quite similar. So, and there's been times there's been no redrive. So, you know, it's just kind of whatever works for you, whatever, you know, and find a formula. And when you have a panel judging system like that, you have to have a little bit of an outline for it. You can't just kind of get in the middle of the ring. And I've been on panel judging. Well, we're going to have redrive. What are we going to do now? Well, it's a little too late to decide when you're now. You need to have that. And it doesn't need to be complicated. I mean, it can be fairly simple like that. If it's a bigger show, maybe they can bring back three. I mean, but you know, can just kind of find out kind of what works for, you know, to help. Again, we want to sort that cream to the top of the class. So that's what we're looking for. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, just to touch a little bit on what Brian was saying, I was involved on a panel judging once at a fairly big show, and they didn't have it sorted out right. You know, they wanted everybody was supposed to put so many in, and then they picked so many out of that. And if you're one of yours in there that you wanted for your top four, say, didn't make the redrive, you couldn't place them in that. That's how they done it, which I thought was not fair at all, the exhibitors, because you got three guys in the ring, you know, and they saw something that I didn't see, you know, and they, my favorite one that I liked the best, and Gary seen something that he didn't like about him, and maybe the other guy too, you know, and they don't even come back in the redrive, and then you wouldn't even place them in the top, was the example at that fair. It's like Brian said, they got to have it worked out and have good guidelines and have it ready to go. Because a lot of times they're not organized. It seems like it adds a lot of time to the class, too.
I think Dick Ames always said with the Arabians, it started off with one judge. Then it went to three. Well, then that wasn't fair. So then they went to five. Then they went to seven, and you dropped the high score and the low score, and it just got more and more complicated. When they had one judge, that was probably the least complicated it ever was. But, I mean, like Brian said, I think it really depends on the show and the circumstances and what works for that show. And, I mean, it's not fair at a place like Calgary. You're going for the world champion six in Calgary, and you have three judges hired, one for each breed that's judged all week, and then you just pick one of those to judge the class. You may as well have all three of them judge it, and it's always ran really smooth. That panel has worked really well. And when you look at the scorecards at the end of it, it's always been
pretty close.
Pretty close. It's just seemed to work. But there's other circumstances where it doesn't work as good. So you just got to do with what works best for your shows.
Yeah, I think to comment on the panel judging, I got no problem with it. But like Brian said, there needs to be a formula so that it moves along and works well. If like Ohio State Fair, there's 36s and you don't have a good formula. I've seen that before where you just sit there till they get scores tabulated and they agree on everything. And it's the crowd doesn't like it. The exhibitors don't like it. If you have something for your show like Calgary, I don't think, you know, they don't have 36s, and I think it works very well for that show. I think there's some that it works well for, and some that, and maybe it could work for every show if the formula was right. So whatever fits your show, I have no problem with, but I think that tabulation time is what sours a lot of people on just waiting and sitting there and horses getting unruly. And so, yeah, whatever works for your show.
Anything else you guys want to add while we're on this topic? Anything else that comes to mind that you want to, like you're judging a show, maybe you want to tell an exhibitor? Or I think one thing Randy touched on big time is respect. You know, the guy in the middle of the ring is doing the best he can, and you know, you need to respect that, whether you agree with it or not. And I think Randy hit the nail on the head too, or Brian or Gary, whoever said it. A lot of the times, you know, it's you, you know, that you need to look upon on how you can improve. And it's a tough job. I mean, it's really tough. And like Randy said, it's harder and harder to get them, it seems like. And I always think, you know, some people just don't want to do it, but you do one a year and do your due diligence. And
yeah, you know, I think too, we all need to do, I try to do one or two a year to do my part, but you do kind of know in past judging, I sometimes don't agree with a judge, and I don't like to talk to them
for 3 days. And because usually in those 3 days, I figure out myself why I placed where I did. And in the heat of the moment, I've judged in the past where you walk through the barn afterwards. If somebody wants to talk, I'm more than willing to tell them why I did what I did. And if you're true to what you like, it's very easy to explain to those exhibitors why you did what you did. And there's those certain exhibitors where you, you know, you're probably going to get a bit of a lashing if you walk down that aisle. And those, you know, I don't agree. I think we all need to respect each other's opinions.
Yeah, 100%, Jerry. I mean, respect is, at the end of the day, it's what it's all about. I mean, we're playing an emotional game, and we're playing at the top of our game as far as the emotion that we put into it. We ask a lot out of our horses, and our game has become so close. I mean, so a lot of times the split between even first and 10th anymore is, those splits are narrow. So, I mean, you might think, I sure didn't think I was the eighth place hitch, but you're probably closer to being the second or third or fourth place hitch just because the splits are so small. So go home, look at your group, or, I mean, and if you want to ask a judge, with respect, you know, what can I do different, what group and your own performance, and just get ready for the next show, and that's all you can really do.
Well, we appreciate all three of you guys. Very well respected. A lot of respect for all three of you. But no, I think this is a great topic of conversation, and I think the listeners are going to gather a lot of great information out of an episode like this, and a lot of valuable information there, and we appreciate you guys getting on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you drop by our Reinhold Tack and Western Wear mailbag, podcast@naclassicseries.com. Once again, podcast@naclassicseries.com. Any questions or feedback you might have, we would love to hear from you. I hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great week, and we'll see you down the road.